Hello, everyone. This is Sue Marks reading today from the Catholic Telegraph for July 2019. First, Seek the Lord by Archbishop Dennis M. Schnur. Every Catholic should know the definition of a sacrament as an outward sign instituted by Christ to give grace. And what is grace? The Catechism of the Catholic Church calls grace participation in the life of God. That is a font that never runs dry. Moreover, the grace poured out by the Holy Spirit in the sacraments of baptism, confirmation, Eucharist, reconciliation, holy orders, matrimony, and anointing of the sick does not only bless and enrich the recipient, it has bountiful effects on the rest of the community as well. Priests, for example, are not bestowed holy orders for their own benefit, but to empower them to celebrate the sacraments and preach the gospel to others in the name of the church. The lay faithful, in turn, support them with their prayers and apostolates in accordance with their own vocations. On May 18th, I was privileged to ordain, by the laying on of hands, 9 new priests for our archdiocese, the most in 4 decades. That such a large number answered God's call with a generous yes was only possible through the graces they already received through regular reception of the sacraments. At the same time, they also benefited from the loving help of grace-filled friends and family over the long years of preparation for priesthood. The number of seminarians at the Athenaeum of Ohio, Mount St. Mary's Seminary of the West, in Mount Washington doubled from 2010 to 2017 and is expected to double again by 2024. In addition, the Athenaeum provides excellent formation for those preparing for the diaconate and lay pastoral ministry. An outward sign of our recent and expected future growth is the new building nearing completion at the seminary. Fenwick Hall, named for the first bishop of Cincinnati, will contain 30 additional seminarian rooms and 2 conference rooms. Set behind and adjacent to the existing seminary building, it will provide space for the seminary to host ongoing or secondary formation programs throughout the summer months. Thus, Fenwick Hall will allow the seminary to extend its mission beyond initial formation for the priesthood and other ministries of the church. This important project, the first building expansion at the seminary since 1962, was made possible by the prayers and the generous financial contributions of the faithful. That is another outward sign of God's grace. The first building constructed on the Mount Washington campus in 1890 was also called Fenwick Hall. Much has changed in 129 years, but the need for priests to administer the sacraments has not changed and never will. At the same time, there is today a greater recognition of lay vocations in the church. The lay-produced newspaper you are reading is an example. When Stephen A. Trosley joined the Catholic Telegraph as editor and general manager in January 2012, he brought with him more than 4 decades of experience as a reporter, editor, and publisher of secular daily newspapers. At the Archdiocese, he has displayed the professionalism of a veteran journalist and the faith of a committed Catholic. I am very grateful for his service as he enters a well-deserved retirement. This is the last issue of the Telegraph under Steve's editorship. I am pleased to welcome, as his successor, Jessica Rinaldo, who becomes editorial director with the August issue. She comes from the Diocese of Shreveport, Louisiana, where she was managing editor, graphic designer, and writer for The Catholic Connection, the monthly magazine of the diocese. Under her direction, the publication won 12 Catholic Press Awards. In these challenging times for the Church in the United States and around the world, we continue to see manifold signs of God's grace at work in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. And here we are, editor's note by Steve Trosley. We just have to listen. The Lord tells us what to do. We just have to listen. One of our recently ordained priests wrote that in a profile about his view of vocations. So when the company that owned the newspaper I was publishing in Illinois in 2011 directed that an additional 18 to 20% would have to be chopped from the 2012 budget, I started pacing my oversized office. We had already reduced expenses beyond what was prudent. Layoffs, at Christmas no less, lay dead ahead. It was time to listen. The community paper suffered economic doldrums. In the days that followed, family advice was plentiful, and my younger daughter suggested I look at CatholicJobs.com. There I found an ad for an editor position at the Catholic Telegraph in Cincinnati. Although I had been a publisher for the preceding 15 years, my heart belongs to newspaper reporting and editing. Also, I had lived in Ohio once before as publisher of the daily newspaper in Norwalk, Ohio. I pulled out my resume for updating and composed my application letter in my head, along with a silent recitation of the Memorare and Veni Sancte Spiritus. An old photo on the wall caught my attention. Sometime around 1985, I had taken the family to a Mississippi River lock and dam to see the Delta Queen heading upriver. I took several photos, but one of the stern of the paddle wheeler made the best composition. I had it framed on my office wall. Under a sign proclaiming Voyages to America, there was the legend I don't remember noticing before, Port of Cincinnati. I finished my application letter and resume and called my wife, whom I knew was sharing my concern about the mandated budget cuts. She worries about my health more than I do. I told her I had seen a sign. We might be moving to Cincinnati. Her response was the same as it was the many times I had been transferred or recruited over the years. We'll do what we have to do. Firing a problem employee can be difficult, but it doesn't weigh on you. Laying off people does, unless you're naturally inclined to being ruthless. In that case, other problems plague you. I did not want to have to lay off more people, especially for a company for which chasing cash flow and executive golden parachutes are the business model. But to the point. In a few days, I heard from the Archdiocesan Chancellor, Father Steve Angie. Could I come to Cincinnati for an interview? We were on our way. I started working here the day after Martin Luther King Day in January 2012 at age 62, and I have never regretted the decision. I found the workplace environment unusually convivial and conducive to lower normal blood pressure. The 12-15-hour days ended, and for the first time in almost 50 years of marriage, my wife could plan a supper time. But most of all, I was struck by the genuine love your neighbor as you love yourself atmosphere. Having the Archdiocesan staff as colleagues has been an honor and a privilege. The staff of the Catholic Telegraph daily demonstrated dedication and professionalism. Sure, we had our bad days, and yes, I have worked at newspapers where I was proud to be a part of the team. But the CTE has been a unique experience. I am proud to have been part of Archbishop Dennis M. Schnur's administration and grateful to him and so many others here for making this my professional and personal home. I could list numerous thank yous here, but there's not enough newsprint. If I can leave our readers with anything, it would be this. Read Catholic literature. Your priests and teachers should encourage it, and you should pass that habit on to your children. Trust the words of Thomist artist, philosopher Mortimer J. Adler. Quote, reading is the basic tool in the living of a good life. End quote. New editor for the Catholic Telegraph. By Jessica Renato. Change is often hard, especially when that change is unexpected. Shortly after Christmas, I found myself sitting in a dark room, feeling exhausted and overwhelmed. The vacation from work and our children's school was over. I had landed firmly back into the reality of trying to juggle multiple jobs, my primary of which was running the Catholic Connection magazine for the Diocese of Shreveport in northern Louisiana, a job I loved dearly. But change was in the air. Our bishop, my longtime boss and friend, had been moved to the Diocese of Baton Rouge, and on that dark night I felt moved to prayer. I opened myself up and told God that I wanted something different and that I was willing to do whatever He asked of me to improve my future and that of my family. I really shouldn't have been so surprised when He answered in a loud and astonishing way. Not long after that night, I was looking for a copy of the Catholic Journalist on the Catholic Press Association's website when I ran across one of the most creatively written job descriptions for an editor I had ever seen. I kept thinking, this is me. This is me. The catch? It was in Cincinnati, Ohio. I brought the job description to my husband, fully expecting him to laugh it off and give me an out. That, however, is not what he did. After a moment's pause, he looked at me and said, "You have to go for it." And that was the beginning of a journey I never expected to find myself on. Through the several months interview and then moving across the country process, I went through the whole spectrum of emotions: fear, wonder, joy, sadness, disbelief. I asked for signs, erroneously believing, I suppose, that I could outsmart God. But He laughed and delivered them to me every single time. I'll never forget the moment I was walking through the Cincinnati airport asking God if this was my new home, when I rounded the corner to a giant sign that said, "Welcome home." In the midst of this discernment, a dear friend mailed a card to me. On it was inscribed, "Be strong, be brave, be fearless. Fearless, you are never alone." Joshua 1:9. I kept it close. It was time to be brave and trust God. Now I find myself as the new editor of the Catholic Telegraph, a job I am extremely excited to embrace. I have worked in Catholic press for 12 years, as well as for several other magazines and newspapers, and look forward to bringing that experience to the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. The world of Catholic news is ever-evolving and changing. So too are the ways in which that news reaches the faithful and the world. We also welcome Dominic Albano to the staff as the Director of Digital Engagement. Dominic will be working to meet people where they are in the digital world. My sincerest gratitude to Steve Trosley for his many years of hard work and dedication to the Catholic Telegraph, and for taking the time to show me the ropes before his retirement. I cannot wait to see where this next great adventure takes me and what plans God has in store for the Catholic Telegraph. I want to mention quickly by the time this is over, these festivals will have been gone, except for, this week, Immaculate Conception in Salina, Immaculate Heart of Mary in Church in Anderson Township, Mary Help of Christians in Fairborn, St. Cecilia Festival in Oakley, St. Gabriel Summerfest in Glendale, St. William and Price Hill. And, those are for next week, Friday, July 19, 20, and 21. Yeah, so those are for next week. They've already been crossed off as if they were red, but I wanted to mention that. So don't miss. Embracing an Expectant Catholicism. This is the Season Moment section by Nick Hardesty. Wow, what an adventure. I just got back from Michigan, where I spent a week with an apostolate called St. Paul Street Evangelization, SPSE. bringing the gospel to absolute strangers. Me. I did that. Nicholas Hardesty, the most introverted guy you will ever meet, walked up to random people in the heart of downtown Detroit and struck up a conversation about Jesus. Talk about seizing the moment. Looking back on it now, it is hard to believe. I don't even like talking on the phone, yet I found a way to do what I thought was impossible. I reached outside myself towards the strange, mysterious unknown of the other. Why is that so difficult for me? I've been thinking it over a lot lately. I'm sure some of it has to do with my temperament. Small talk, making friends, meeting new people. That sort of thing is probably never going to be particularly life-giving for me. I'm also inexperienced. It's natural to feel insecure about something you haven't done very often. Yet that doesn't entirely explain it. I also learned in my week pounding the streets that, that at least when it comes to sharing the gospel, this is also a faith issue for me. I wasn't all alone out there. I was part of a 5-person team. There were other teams in close proximity as well. Watching them work made me realize there is an expectant faith on display here. I wouldn't call any of my team members particularly extroverted, yet they engaged stranger after stranger because they were convinced that God would reveal himself. Not just that God wanted to, but that he would. A couple days later, the street teams participated in an event called Light the Fire. The premise is simple. Pick a beautiful church in a high traffic area. Open the doors. Invite people in. Befriend and pray with them. Process their experience with them and give them something more. In Detroit, that church is Old St. Mary's. It's a 134-year-old piece of heaven plopped right down in the heart of Greektown. A bustling nightlife has sprung up all around it with trendy restaurants, bars, and even a large casino within a short walking distance of the church's front steps. Needless to say, St. Mary's is perfectly situated to reach the unchurched. At 7 p.m., teams of two began asking strangers a simple question. Would you like to come in and light a candle? I admit I was skeptical. People are out here to eat, play, and socialize. Who's going to want to light a candle? I pictured myself waiting inside, twiddling my thumbs while I waited for someone to pray with. Yet, at 7:01 p.m., an amazing thing happened. A throng of people came pouring into the church. I couldn't believe it. People were actually accepting the invitation. I saw people step inside, set their eyes on the beauty of God's house, and just start crying. I saw people kneeling and praying fervently in front of a monstrance and a Eucharist they were meeting for the first time. For 2 hours straight, the line to light a candle extended the length of the church, and our prayer teams were never without someone to pray with. All this taught me a humbling truth. I really ought to expect more out of the Lord. Let's be real. I was shocked and amazed because I expected so little out of God and out of myself. But what if I stepped out, reached out, and pursued the other fully convinced, that God was ready and willing to work through me? Then I might finally become the kind of disciple Christ is calling me to be. The truth is, you and I, all of us, could do extraordinary things for the Lord if only we had a bit more faith in him. Red fans donate food to benefit St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry. St. Vincent de Paul food pantries are now able to provide 5,000 additional meals this summer to struggling families. The Cincinnati Reds and St. Vincent de Paul's annual Strikeout Hunger food drive on Friday, May 31st and Saturday, June 1st brought in 6,250 pounds, more than 3 tons of non-perishable food. Fans contributed to the drive outside Great American Ballpark and received a free ticket to an upcoming Reds game. We are extremely grateful for a continued community partnership with the Cincinnati Reds and for all of the thoughtful donations from fans, says Mike Dunn, executive director of St. Vincent de Paul in Cincinnati. As a result, our pantries will remain stocked through the critical summer months to help struggling families across Cincinnati. When schools are out, too many families must choose between buying groceries and paying their rent. This drive helps keep our food pantries stocked so families don't have to make that choice. We would also like to thank WLWT and 700WLW for their help promoting this important initiative. This is the 13th year the Reds and St. Vincent de Paul have partnered to strike out hunger. St. Vincent de Paul operates food pantries throughout Cincinnati, including the Edith and Carl Lunar Choice Food Pantry in the East West End and 11 neighborhood-based pantries. For more information about donating or hosting a food drive, please call 513-562-8841 or visit svdpcincinnati.org. Tornado recovery efforts continue in Dayton and the North. By Eileen Conley, OSU. Weeks after the May 27th tornadoes that tore through Dayton and areas north of the city, recovery efforts remain in full force with local faith-based organizations taking a lead role. This is where Catholic social service agencies such as Catholic Social Services of the Miami Valley and St. Vincent de Paul, along with numerous other charitable organizations such as Our Home Family Resource Center, play such a vital role, said Archbishop Dennis M. Schnur immediately following the tornadoes. I'm deeply grateful for the women and men who work in these agencies to serve their sisters and brothers in distress. Please join me in praying for all our sisters and brothers who have been impacted by these events, he added. May the Blessed Virgin Mary intercede for them, and may the Holy Spirit give them courage and hope as they rebuild their lives. Laura Roche, CEO of Catholic Social Services of the Miami Valley, based in Dayton, said that with the immediate needs of area residents addressed, their focus, in collaboration with other agencies, is a cohesive, long-term recovery plan. With the tornadoes not at the top of the news anymore, it is important to remember that recovery will be a long process. Those impacted will need support for years to come. Many of the hardest-hit areas were already struggling, Roche noted. The tornado had a wide impact zone, Dayton, out to Beaver Creek, north to Salina, and in Mercer County. Those are service areas, too. Many of the impacted neighborhoods have highly dense populations and lots of families living paycheck to paycheck, many older homes and apartment complexes. As such, long-term housing is a primary focus for the agency, along with continuing to provide food assistance, household items, and other practical needs. Long-term case management assistance is also planned. Every family's situation is different, so we're really being flexible and working with other community resources to have the greatest impact, Roche said. We're really grateful to the Archdiocese for the immediate support. To be able to address people's needs so quickly was a great blessing. She also expressed gratitude for the support of community members who have come forward to donate, volunteer, and organize food and supply drives. This has been a very personal experience for anyone who cares about the region. It's been really heartwarming to see how people have stepped up. One example is St. Helen Parish in Riverside, where festival organizers pledged to donate 10% of net profits to tornado relief efforts. Official attendance was not counted for the event, but parish staff say there was record attendance. The final donation amount was not available at press time, but it was expected to be in the thousands. St. Adalbert Parish in Dayton was one of several faith communities that sustained damage during the late May storms. A post-tornado inspection determined the severe winds caused extensive damage to the church roof, raising it off of the rafters and creating a safety hazard. Per insurance and building inspector requirements, liturgies at the church were suspended until further notice. Amid the destruction at Queen of Martyrs Parish, a statue of the Blessed Mother remained unscathed. We found her May crown across the parking lot, said Luann Keel, president of the parish's St. Vincent de Paul Conference. We believe the Lord had spoken when we saw Mary still standing. That gave us major hope, was a booster to our faith, and symbolizes our strength. While repairs to the church are being made, parishioners were able to attend Mass at the neighboring Our Lady of Grace. Queen of Martyrs has since reopened, and the St. Vincent de Paul Conference is working with other parish groups and St. Vincent de Paul Dayton District Council to reach out to those in need. We didn't get a lot of calls for assistance right away, Keel said. People were just in shock over what happened. Now we're really seeing the effects. People who literally have to start over and need everything. We're also seeing the residual effects, including lost wages, since many businesses were flattened. People's homes may be intact, but they're not getting a paycheck. Now we're bracing and planning for the long term. On June 14th, Michael Vanderburg, Executive Director of St. Vincent de Paul Dayton, was appointed chair of the Montgomery County Long-Term Recovery Operations Committee. We have a lot of work to do, he acknowledged. We know the types of things that need to be done, but just don't know the volume yet. An immediate need, he said, is to put together a plan for affordable housing on a temporary basis for the poorest who were displaced. Even if they have a responsible landlord, the landlord won't be able to rebuild for a year or more. There are so many considerations on the housing front, not the least of which is zoning and the actual expense for replacing the homes. What I'm really concerned about at this point is what we call compassion fatigue, Vanderburg said. Here, very soon, people would get tired of hearing about the needs. We need to be sure that there is a constant drumbeat about where the needs are so people's needs get met. If we don't, we'll have a tendency to move on without them, and we don't want to lose their voice. I think that's all that we have time for today, but I certainly did enjoy reading the goodbye letter from editor Steve Trosley and the new letter from our next new editor. Everyone, please enjoy this next week. Be blessed. And thanks for listening. Sue Marks for the Catholic Telegraph. Bye-bye.